Hi, welcome to Creative Coding for Windows 8 JavaScript using Processing. Today we'll be looking at sine, cosine, drawing circles, and looking at some angles. So it is math heavy, but don't panic. We are going to be going over these concepts. You know, trigonometry is a core trick we have as creative coders. The challenge is, and I found as teaching these math concepts to designers before, is a lot of times we got burned in high school math. It wasn't presented to us the way I think we are used to visually problem solving. A lot of times they simply presented it as a series of algorithms or formulas you had to memorize and then use again and again and again. I have found that by talking about the story of where these came from, visually seeing what was going on, it'll help us to appreciate that first. Trigonometry, geometry were the first creative coding languages. The artists were actually using these to build real things. Once we realize that and we get a sense for what they do, we start converting it into code. For a lot of students, this was the first time they actually started enjoying math when they understood this concept. If you feel totally comfortable with sine and cosine and you just want to jump straight to the code, it isn't a lot of code. This is what we'll be building today. Again, it's not a lot of code. Most of it is all in setup. We're not even going to be animating anything today. We're creating a petal class. We'll be creating a flower. And most of the code for the petal is all on its rendering, basically drawing itself. So the trigonometry isn't very heavy. It's very concise, but there are a couple key concepts. Radians, converting from radians to degrees, and sine and cosine. When we run it, we'll be able to create this golden ratio spiral design. Look something like that. So again, if you just care about the code, jump to the end of the video. But for those of you who didn't have a good time in high school math, please watch the next couple minutes. It might make things a little bit easier. So let's kind of explain what's going on. What in the world is a radian? How do we convert from degrees to radians? What are sine and cosine? It all starts with the circle. And back in the day, before computers, before everything else, people just had rope. You'd have somebody standing here, and this is the origin. You can picture some Egyptian or some ancient Babylonian, and they'd have some dude over here, and they'd have so much rope. Right? Let's say they had this much rope. Now, so whatever that rope length was, because it didn't matter, all of these things they discovered worked no matter how long the rope was. If this rope, whatever it was, let's consider that one unit length. When this person holding on to that rope walked around this guy, he'd create a circle, as we know, right? We'd kind of, let's draw out kind of the path that he was going to walk, right? So he'd walk something like this. So I'm going to draw a very wonky circle. Finally get back to where he was. Now, they started noticing a relationship between how long the rope was and how many times it would take that same length of rope to clear the circle. They wanted to know, is there a relationship? And it doesn't matter, again, how long the rope was. Is there a relationship to the length of the radius and the circumference, or how long it took you to go all the way around the circle? And they found out that there was a relationship. They found that to go all the way around the circle, it took a little bit more than 6 lengths of rope. Let's kind of visualize how this was. So if this was our length of rope, and somebody else was over here kind of measuring, they would be able to wrap on the outside of this first rope around one, right around here. This is where this length of rope would pretty much end if they were walking around it. This is around what we know today as being around 60 degrees. It's a little bit less than 60 degrees. Since it's a little bit less than 60 degrees, the next rope would pretty much get them to a little bit before 120. And the third rope would get them almost to 180 degrees. It was 3 and a little bit of change. Now, it's important to know because it's a question of how exact you want to be. They say, how many lengths of rope does it take you to walk 180 degrees? You can say 3. It's around 3. And you'll be accurate. You can say it's around, that's a symbol for around, our kind of guesstimate. It's around 3. If you want to be a little bit more accurate, well, technically it's 3.14. It's 3 and then at least 0.14 more to get to 180. If you want to be more accurate, 5, 9, 2, 6, 5, 4. you can actually keep going. You'll never end. How many radii it takes to get to 180 degrees became this magic number that never ends. You can keep getting more and more accurate, and you'll never get the exact number. So it's a question of how good of a guess do you want to be, or how close do you want to get? That's why they ended up just using the symbol for it called pi. But there isn't anything overly magical about pi. We shouldn't be scared about it. Pi is the 3 and change it takes for a rope of this long, for a radius of this long, how many times it gets to 180, to get to 180 degrees, right? To get to half a circle. Now, if you were to keep carrying this off, right, you'd get to the, you get 4 ropes, 5 ropes, and then 6 ropes, and a bit more change, right? That's the only reason why they say that the circumference of a circle is equal to 2 pi, right? Pi for the first half, pi for the second half, times the radius. This is where all the stuff comes in. You could solve this with rope outside on a sunny day with a friend if you want, but there isn't anything necessarily magical about this stuff. Pi, 3 and change, takes around 3 and change radii to go around the circumference of a circle. The reason this is important is because a couple hundred years ago, somebody finally said, why are we using 360 degrees for a circle? Is there something special about this number? And they decided that it wasn't, but it was a lot more confusing, right? Have you ever wondered why there's 360 degrees? A lot of times we just kind of take it for fact. Well, there's a circle, we know that if we go, you know, we know that 90 degrees is straight up, and then it's another 90 degrees to get to 180, right? And then we have 270 down here, getting back to 360. But why 360? Why not just 100, right? Or 200, or any other number? Not to get too much into it, but these ancient Babylonians, they worshiped the stars, right? And they had a lunar calendar. There's 360 days in a lunar year. So as they were kind of studying the circle of the heavens, it made sense for them because of their astrology. Well, we'll just cut up a circle into 360 because there's 360 days in our lunar year. That's the reason. And it's because of that that we have to do all this really crazy 30 and 60 degrees and 90 degrees and working with systems that we're not used to working with today, because thousands of years ago, they used to like looking up at the heavens and they had a lunar calendar. A couple hundred years ago, people said, there has to be a better way of doing that. Now, for a lot of us, for us creative types, the degrees were fine at a certain point. We're just making pretty things anyways, right? But certain mathematicians started getting a hold of this and said, wait a second, we can see in this relationship between the radius and the circle, there's already a relationship in place here. This unit length of rope, we know will always take, you know, one unit length of rope. If you have this much rope for the radius, and you were to wrap it around the circle, this unit, they started calling it a radian. So how many radians are there in a circle? Well, there's 2 pi, right? That's why we said there's 2 pi radians in a circle. So they started splitting this pi up into 6 pieces, right? So every circle has around 6 radians in it. Now, we can be exact and we say every circle has exactly 360 degrees in it. Or we can say every circle has around 6 radians in it. If you wanted to be exact, you'd have to say has 2 pi radians in it. But it's this relationship between radians and degrees. It's just a different way of measuring. If you want to take a circle and cut it up into 360, makes it a lot easier to think about it in degrees. And our brains are, we're kind of used to it now. Okay, 90 degrees, 180 degrees. But for a computer, it doesn't have any of that biases. It's easier for the computer to think of angles, not in degrees, but in radians, because it's keeping all this stuff related. It's kind of finding this relationship between them. Now, one radian, as we said before, is around 60 degrees. It's actually 57 point and a little bit more change, right? It's a little bit less than 60 degrees. But we can think about this. So if we had a degree, if we had something that was around 60 degrees and we needed to convert it to radians, we'd say, it's around 1, right? If we had something 180 degrees and we need to convert it to radians, we'd say, well, it's around 3, or actually it's pi. So this kind of gives us the clue, the key to how to convert from degrees to radians. If 180 degrees, and let me kind of get a new piece of paper. So if we have our circle, and we're just going to 180, right? Here's one, negative one, right? 90 degrees. Here's our radius. If there are pi number of radians, one, two, three, right? One radian, two radians, three radians, and then a little bit of change, and that change gets us pi radians to get to 180. To convert from 180 degrees is equal to 2 pi radians. And just step back. Don't let that pi symbol freak you out. It's basically saying, right, there's a, excuse me, it's equal to pi, my bad. It's equal to pi radians. So if I want to figure out how much 1 degree is, I would divide this by 180 over here. And I divide pi by 180 over here. So 1 degree is equal to pi divided by 180 radians. This is our secret formula to converting from the computer. So this will allow us to think if we have 45 degrees and we need to tell it to the computer, we have to say 45 degrees times pi over 180. This pi over 180 is what's going to allow us to convert from degrees to radians. And you simply flip it over, and that allows us to convert back. So that's radians. That's pi, and that's radians, at least visually. Once we start playing with code, it'll make a little bit more sense. But there's one more thing you should visually understand before we start talking about circles, and that's rotation. Let's look, and as we saw before, this was the x value over here, right? And this was the y value up here. This is assuming that your 0, 0 starts right here. Now, if you're right at all the way x and y is turned all the way down to 0, right? If you're at x is 1 and y is 0, you don't have a triangle. You pretty much have the thinnest triangle in existence. But as this circle starts rotating, as this point starts rotating around the origin this way, something really interesting happens to your triangle. You start off with a triangle where the x is very, very close to your radius. The x and your radius are almost equal, right? It's very, very thin. Your x is starting at a little bit less than 1. But your y value, mapping over here, is just a tiny, tiny little bit above 0. As this point continues to rotate around the circle, your x, which started at 1, starts dropping towards 0, while your y, which started at 0, starts increasing until it gets up to 1. So for this triangle, you've taken a little bit less out of x, and you've added a little bit more to y. Now let's just look at it. Does the amount that we've taken away from x seem like it's the same amount that we added to y? Actually, it doesn't. We added a lot more to y when we just took a little bit out of x. If it were the exact same amount, if maybe when we're halfway around, we've taken half of our x and half of our y, it actually would have put us there, right? If we're doing it that naively, that whatever we take away from x to get to 0, we add to y to get to 1, we don't end up with a curve. We'd actually end up with a straight line. So it can't just be take a little bit away from x and add it to y. The way x moves from 1 to 0 has to look different than the way y is going to move from 0 to 1. There's a big long list, and a lot of people sat around and made these big long lists of exactly how much you take away from x and exactly how much you add to y in order to make this rotation happen. Back before computers, they had to write all this stuff down. Then they turned into lookup tables, and now we just have a nice computer function that does it. And the function that tells us this is whenever you're handling rotation, the function that takes care of how much you have to starting at one with x, how much you take away from x, this is called your cosine. The function that tells you starting at zero, how much you add a little bit to get up to one for 90 degrees is called sine. We're going to see how these two work right now as soon as we get into code. But this is what's going on. When we're saying, when we give a degree, say 30 degrees, and we're saying, what's the cosine of 30 degrees? Well, it's the computer. We're going to have to say 30 degrees, convert it to radians for me, right? The cosine will tell you, if your radius is 1, move, you're actually now at, like, say, 0.8, right? The sine will tell you, if your radius is 1 and you're looking at 30 degrees, move it up this much. So this is going to be the number line. That's why probably the last point, when we look at these graphs, here's 0 and here's 1, right? Here's negative 1. If we're starting at 0 degrees, our cosine, remember the thing that tracks x, this always starts at 1. And by the time we get to 0, so we'll do cosine up here. Our cosine always starts at 1. At 0 degrees, our cosine is 1. And then by 90 degrees, it's gone to 0. And by 180 degrees, it's gone all the way down to negative 1. If you finish the circle, it ends up finishing the curve, right? So this right here is 180. Our sine wave, which tracks y, remember at a very, very, very thin triangle, your sine wave is practically 0. At 0 degrees, your sine is 0. The sine of 0 degrees is 0. But then as you go up to 90 degrees, and as you get to 180, it goes back down to 0, and then it continues. So this is where the sine and cosine waves look like. The only other reason I'm visualizing this is because we've talked about one easing algorithm before, right? Where you want to be minus where you are times a percentage. Sometimes you'll want to take advantage of this ability to fluctuate from 1 to negative 1 in a very graceful manner. You can say, start at 1 and start dropping slowly and then pick up speed. And once you get to the bottom, still being fast, shoot back up again. This is a perfect way by mapping to cosine, and we'll see this in code in a minute. You have this ability of kind of starting high and then accelerating down and then bouncing up and then slowing down. So this ability of animating even a bouncing ball this way, you can do it by using cosine. We'll have this easing up and down of things starting off quickly, getting slow, starting slow, building up momentum, slowing back down. So sine and cosine, once you kind of start playing around with it and you see what that code makes your particles do, you'll start getting a feel for when to use sine, when to use cosine. But the most, the best and first way of using sine and cosine is to actually rotate something around the circle. We've had a lot of theory. Let's jump into code and let's start seeing what this looks like. It'll make things a bit easier. So let's load up our environment. Okay, so in our setup environment, we are setting up with our basic framework. Again, we don't even need a draw loop because we're not animating anything in this sketch. We're just exploring the concepts of sine, cosine, and a trigonometry. So we have our setup function. We'll be able to draw everything. Right now, we're basically setting up our width and height and drawing a black background. First thing we want to do is let's add a petal class. I'm going to call it petal because we're going to end up drawing a flower. Petal, if we're going to have a petal class, let's have some total petals. And for right now, let's say 360, or let's make it easier. Let's do 360. And then we will do a petal array of petals is equal to new petal array of total petals. We are also going to keep track of what rotation we're on, and we're going to put it out here for now. The reason is because we'll be tweaking this a little bit later. Okay, so we've created this petal class. We have an array of petals. The petal class, it's empty, so let's come in and let's start adding some stuff here for the petal class. Like with most classes, if we're going to put it on the screen, it should have an x and y property. So we're going to give it an x and y property. each petal is going to have its own rotation. And we're also going to be looking at scale this time. So we're going to create a scale variable. And to start off with, we're going to give it a scale of 1.0. We're going to look at the rendering stack a little bit to see how to rotate individual elements relative to themselves. Now I'm also going to go ahead and assign three colors for right now. We're not going to use all three of them yet, but we will toward the end. So we're going to do one color. Now if you read RGB alpha, this is going to be all green, all blue, so this will make a yellow. We're dropping it. It's a quasi-opaque. I'm going to create a detail color, and I'm going to give this color another one that I've seen. This one will be all white, but it'll be semi-transparent. And then I'm going to create a trim color. And for now, our trim color will set it up equal to black. Our petal is also going to have a render function, which will take care of all the drawing, so that each petal will be in charge of drawing itself. For right now, let's just say we're going to fill it with the base color. And for now, we'll say ellipse will be equal to this.x, this.y. We'll say 5, 5. This will just draw an ellipse. We're going to go and change this by the time we're done. But for right now, let's just start looking at code. Let's start getting this stuff in code so we can start tweaking it. So this should give us everything we need. We have a petal. It has its x and y. We've defined colors for it. We're using one of those colors to draw its position on the screen. Okay, good. So now let's set up everything in our setup function and start seeing if we can get some circles forming first. I'm going to say for I equals 0 while I is less than total petals, I plus plus. So this is going to be our setup loop. Now I'm going to say we have a new petal. Petal.x is equal to something, right? Right now, let's just put it like this. So if we just did this, we would set all 360 petals to a fixed point, to 200. In fact, let's kind of turn this guy down a little bit. Let's just do 30 petals for right now. If I were to run this, it shouldn't be very impressive. We should see 30 dots all sitting on top of each other. And of course, we don't even see it because we didn't call the render. We didn't even call the render function. That's our mistake. So we would do petal.render. There you go. We see 30 dots all sitting on top of each other, so it only looks like one dot. Now, when we were looking at the geometry before on the whiteboard, we were saying the origin was in the middle. But when we're dealing with the sketch, the 0, 0, right, is actually at the upper left-hand side. So we got to make sure that our origin, that if we're thinking in trigonometry, the origin is truly where we want to be, the middle of the circle. Now, since we've had that width and height before, and we've seen this already, we're defining our width and height of our size here. Instead of just picking some arbitrary number, we can say width divided by 2 and height divided by 2. Still nothing much more exciting, except now all the circles have moved to the middle of our stage at whatever size we want to be. Now, we talked a lot about the radius, so let's go ahead. If we were doing everything with a radius of 1 pixel, you wouldn't see anything. We're going to be drawing a circle, but we want that radius to be more than just one unit. So let's define a radius up here. And we'll start off with just 60 pixels. So if I went ahead and I did this, now we get to plug in our sine and cosine. Before we do, we're going to need to have a conversion value. We talked a lot about this 2 radians value, so let's go ahead and type that in. 2 radians is equal to, and if you recall, we said it's equal to pi And in processing, you get to just type pi. In some languages, you have to do math.py, right? But processing is already set up to just say pi and it'll know what you're talking about. Pi divided by 180. Here is that transform value. This way, this will allow us to think in degrees, but if we're going to give it to the computer, we have to say our degrees times to radians so that the computer can convert it into radians, which is how the computer thinks about angles. So here's our finished. So starting at the origin, it's going to be whatever radius is. Now, we didn't have to do this when we were doing it on the whiteboard because our radius was 1. Our radius was our unit vector. But if we really want to scale this out, if we make our radius bigger, we have to multiply it by whatever, and remember, cosine tracks x. So it's the cosine of whatever my current rotation is times 2 radians. I say, wait a second, where'd that guy come from? Well, every pedal we're going to want to increase its own particular rotation, right? So I'm going to come up here for a second and say, remember this guy right here, rotation? So every time we drop a pedal, we're going to want to add a certain angle to it. So right now I'm going to call this an angle of, say, 10 degrees. So when I come over here, for every pedal, I'm going to say my rotation is plus equal to whatever I want my angle to be. By keeping them as variables out here, as I tweak these numbers, it'll be able to change what I'm drawing. So this means every pedal is going to be rotated by 10 degrees around the origin. We're going to be creating a new pedal, and then we're going to be using our new found trigonometry skills to basically get those 10 degrees or whatever happens to be, converting them to radians so we can figure out the cosine, which will tell us at a full radius, the cosine will basically start giving you a decimal going from 1 all the way down to 0. So this is going to allow our x to properly move down along our x line. In fact, we can prove this because if we didn't change the y and we just ran it, we're seeing that sure enough, it's creating this path here. So before they were all in a row, now we're saying at radius, but as your degree is moving, simply move your x down this way. Let's show it simply working on y to show that we are doing that same thing. If I did a radius times, and it's the same thing, but now we're using sine, rotation times to radians. If I were to comment this out, we would see that now it does the same thing, but only up. Let's increase the radius so we can see it a little bit better. Let's have given it an initial radius of 120. If we run this, we'll actually see how it's distributed a little bit differently. Here we go. So you see that it starts making big jumps until it starts getting toward the end, and then it starts bunching up a lot closer. Same thing going down. Big jumps, bunching up at the end. In this way, now we had 30 pedals. We were adding by 10 degrees. If we wanted to get a full circle, we would actually go 300 and we'd go 36. 36 pedals, if you're dropping them down at every 10 degrees that we're used to, that would get you 360, right? So let's put in 36 pedals. We're adding them at 10 degrees each pedal right here. 10 degrees each pedal. And now let's uncomment both. So we can see both our cosine affecting the x position, starting off at 1, going to 0, to negative 1, back to 0, back to positive 1, and our sine direction, starting at 0, going up to positive 1, going back down to 0, going down to negative 1, as it turns around the circle, going back up to 0. So if we do this, we should now get a perfect circle that we ring. I might want to stop here and look at the code, kind of understand what's going on, but here's sine and cosine in effect. Our origin is right here. The first couple circles, x was at the full radius, because the cosine is 1, so it was 1 times the full radius for x. The sine of y, which is 0 times the full radius, which is why y was at 0 relative to the origin. This starts, our x starts moving in as we take the curve until it becomes 0 at 90 degrees. X starts becoming negative 1 times the radius as we get to 180 degrees. It starts coming back in to 0 as we finish the circle, and then it starts spreading, growing back out to 1. And y is doing the sine wave for that. It goes all the way up, comes back down. So we're seeing this effect of sine and cosine. This is visually what it looks like. To draw a circle, that's all it takes, sine and cosine. Let's start adding a little bit of style to our petals, though. Let's start talking about individual rotation. We've been doing a little bit of a cheat right now. We've been saying, draw this x and y, and since we've been using circles, we haven't. It's been okay for us, but all of these circles are kind of going the same way. If we wanted to add something a little bit more, if we wanted to add a rectangle, let's say we went ahead and did this. Let's say we wanted to add a rectangle, and we said it was at this dot x, this dot y, and we wanted to make a long, thin rectangle, so let's say 22. And before we do that, let's do this fill is equal to this dot detail color, just to get a slightly different color. Let me refresh this. Let's look what's happening. Oh. Color, detail color, this dot detail color, and I forgot my T. Rect. Let's refresh. Although I'm placing these guys, and I had my little circle and my long line, as they're turning this way, they're not rotating. And I would like them to fan out. I would like to that when you're at 45 degrees, your line has actually been turned up at 45 degrees. So we kind of create the starburst. Since we can't yet rotate the individual elements, I'm kind of being stuck with all of the elements always going the same way. I've just been placing their x and y. That starts running into problems. So how do we rotate individual elements? In some languages, it's a lot easier to basically draw them on screen and you kind of rotate it, like Silverlight or WPF, right? Or even Flash. In JavaScript, in Canvas, and as well in processing, it has this concept of a drawing context. You're basically rotating the paper as you're drawing something. So if you just said rotate to one thing, it's like you rotated the paper and every other thing you draw would be that way. It starts getting pretty confusing, so they introduce this concept of like a matrix, and you're able to push and pop matrices. Let's show you what it looks like, because it's a little less confusing when you see it in code. We're basically saying, however the paper is before you come into me, kind of remember that. Push the matrix, push what everything was normal, because I'm going to start doing some weird things with rotation. So I want to clean up after myself, so push the matrix. Basically, remember where you were before I'm going to start doing my weird funky stuff. And when you're all done drawing, you're going to say pop matrix. No matter what I did in between my draw commands, for me personally, go back to where you were. This is good practice, because what we're going to be doing is we're going to be rotating stuff around here relative to the petal's own position, right? So let's kind of make this up a little bit. We also kept saying, draw this ellipse at x and y. Once we want to start drawing a lot of things, it's better to think of how these shapes work with each other. This is what it looks like. We'll say, in general, translate to x and y. And draw this ellipse at 0. Let's make it a little bit bigger. Right? That way, this rec starting at 0 and go along this way. Let's step back and think conceptually what's going on here. When every petal gets called, when it's placed, first it's kind of freezing the page as the JavaScript's drawing it. It says, okay, freeze yourself wherever you are. Now, instead of moving the pen, it's saying move the paper, translate the canvas to a certain position. because we're going to translate the canvas, and then from that position at 0, 0, draw an ellipse and then draw a rectangle, right? So there's a big difference. Once we start saying rotation and translate, you're not moving the pen anymore, if you will. You're actually moving the paper underneath the pen. This is going to be the only way we're able to solve rotating images, so that we're always drawing the same way, but we're rotating the paper. Let's just type in all the code and see what it looks like. So we're going to draw a base color. Let me move my rectangle up here. And I'm going to start my rectangle a little bit off, because I want my rectangle to be from the middle, right? So I'm moving negative 10 because I'm giving it a width of 20. I'm then going to draw an ellipse. I'm going to do detail color, and let me just finish up the entire petal. So I'm going to draw another ellipse here, a little bit smaller. And I'm going to use my third color. And draw a even smaller circle right there. I'm going to pop matrix. The only thing I've done here is expanded what it looks like. I still haven't added rotation, but at least now we kind of have this. Okay. I misspelled ellipse. Okay, so we're kind of seeing this petal shape starting to take shape. I want to rotate these guys out. Now that I'm able to do this using the push and pop matrix and moving the page to translate, I can now start rotating. First, let's give every petal, let every petal know what its rotation is by coming back up to when we were setting it up. We had this kind of, this was keeping track of what rotation we were on for any given petal, but the petals themselves didn't know. So we'll tell every petal what its rotation is equal to rotation times to radian. Let's just do it here once so we can set it up. So we're drawing the petals, putting their x and y position in a circle, and then we're saying, here's the rotation that we just finished drawing you at. So if we're setting the petals' rotation here, which was the property here, because by default they had set up to 0, which is why none of them were changing. Now we know that when they get called to draw themselves, they will have their own custom rotation. And once you've done all the push and pop matrices, then you get to rotate the canvas easily. At least something gets to be easy this time. Say, rotate this.rotation. We don't have to worry about rotating back, although we move the page, because that's what pop matrix does. Now if we run this again, I think I misspelled my, here we go, to radians. There we go. Now, if you look closely, you're going to see that each one of these elements is now rotating based on the degree that it should be. Now, that's a good thing. At this point, we're covering a lot of math here. We've covered a lot of sine and cosine. You can figure out how to create a circle this way. And now, using that rotation for each individual element, you'll be able to rotate this drawing however you want. This instantly applies value if you're creating, say, like something like asteroids or whatever. You have a ship, and as you're turning, you want that ship to also be able to rotate. Here's how you would be nesting that rotation stack using the push and pop matrices and then rotating based on your angle. At this point, though, let's start jumping into a little bit more fun. I'm going to come over here and what if we did something like this? Now I have 36 petals. If I wanted to blow this number up to say 300 petals and I run this, I'm not going to see any difference because every petal's being added the same amount. So once I finish the first 36 of them, they just keep drawing on top of each other. What I'd like to do is let me start spiraling this out. I'm going to do that by creating a variable over here called float petal radius growth. I'm going to make this a very, very small number. There's nothing magical about this number. It's just I'm going to be multiplying every time there's a petal. Let's put it in use over here. We're adding rotation. This is our general rotation. But the radius we want to use, remember those two guys holding the rope? Every single petal we drop, this guy's going to let a little bit more rope out. So it's instead of drawing a circle, he's going to be little by little spiraling out. And we do this by saying radius is times equal our radius growth. Again, we're doing times a very, very small number. So every time you drop a petal, let that rope out just a little bit more. So we're not going to do a perfect circle. It's going to start spiraling this way. Let's run it and see what it looks like. Sure enough, we can see that we're starting, and as we're rotating, it starts spinning out and out and out and out. Now this in itself is kind of cool, right? I mean, we're building up on a lot of these things. At any given time in this lesson, you can stop, tweak numbers, and really see the fun stuff that's going on. But let's keep adding up to this. Let's take a look at what's going on. So we're building it out. We're still spinning out all this area. Now let's see if there's something else we can do before we start getting into them. Okay, so let's come back here. We haven't used our scale variable yet, so let's start messing around with scale. Over here, under after we rotated the petal in our first setup, let's start doing some scale. So we're going to say the scale of every petal, when we start off, and I don't believe it's scale. I think we defined it as scale var. Yep, here it is, scale var. So when we're plopping every petal down on the stage, we're giving it a rotation. Now we're going to give it a suggested scale. Let's think about what this math is going for. Remember, this I is going to be growing from 0 to total petals. So if we just did it like this, it would grow from 0 all the way up to 1. But we're going to want to kind of tone it down a little bit, so we're going to multiply I. So when we're done with the loop, this is going to be total petals times 2, right? So this is actually going to get us up to 2. We're going to grow the scale from 0 all the way up to twice as big as it should. So somewhere in the middle will be this kind of happy size that we've been playing with so far. If we're going to put the scale here, nothing will happen if we run it unless we also adjust the scale in our render stack. So I'm going to come down to our render stack. And after we rotate it, we're going to want to set the scale. Now, one of it controls the scale x, the other controls the scale y. If we want to keep everything uniform, we would do them both the same. But here's another area you can play around and see what happens. Now, if we run it, let's see what we get. When we start off, it should be really small. As they get farther away, they should start getting bigger. Sure enough, we're starting off at a very, very tiny scale, letting a little bit more rope out. As we spiral around and around and around, we're also increasing the scale so that by the time we're done with the outer ring, they're at twice as big as what our normal scale is right here at 1. All right. So at this point, let's come back up, see what we have, and let me compare and make sure I'm not missing anything. All right. And you know what? We didn't end up needing to use this petal array after all. If you want to go ahead and animate this, you would start in your draw loop, looping through that petal array and changing whatever properties you want, right? But for right now, the only thing we're left to do is talk about a very special angle, because we've been, we've started at 300. We have, let me also look really quick. Let's start off our radius a little bit closer, down to 60. Let me run it. All we've done is this initial circle is a little bit tighter now. It started a little bit tighter. When we started at 120, it had a lot more of the screen. Here we've started a little bit closer. Good thing that we keep the scale small, so it still looks very, very pretty and very packed. This in itself is kind of a predictable geometric pattern. We see that everything's lined up very, very nicely here, because we're using the exact same angle offset. In fact, the angle offset we've been using up here is right here. We're saying for every angle offset, go 10 degrees. But there's a very special angle that's found in nature that's called the golden angle, or the golden ratio. I'll let you go ahead and Bing that, but if you look up the golden angle, the golden ratio, you'll find it in a lot of natural patterns, from the Milky Way galaxy to the way sunflower petals are distributed. And it basically says this special angle, if every time you're rotating, you're dropping a petal down this way, it starts creating this very, very elegant pattern. The angle that we'll want to use instead of, and we'll do it in degrees to make it easier. So what we were calling our angle, where was it? Here we go, our angle, 137 point, and let me type in this big old number, 64084 4293. This is the only thing we're changing from what it was to what this guy was. In fact, let me go ahead and set this aside right here. We were using 10, right? Okay, so I have this variable. Again, if we use 10 and we run it, it's what we had before. This pattern that we had before. And we'll see that as we start increasing this number to, say, 80 degrees, we'll see that that circle visually starts getting a little bit funkier. This is a great thing to take off into set up your own draw loops and start redrawing every time, kind of playing with this angle to see how it grows as we start getting higher and higher. 120 degrees. As we get to 130 degrees, let's add a little bit of change, 132 degrees. Okay, we're starting to see a little bit of wonkiness pop up in here. Let's get a little bit higher, 136 degrees. We're starting to get this spiral galaxy, and for a lot of people, this might be what you're looking for. If you're looking for the spiral effect. Now, notice the spiral effect looks, look at the rotation that it seems to be spinning. Okay, now remember this. If I were to change this to something higher, like 138 degrees, it's now rotating the other way around. There's this very special angle that fits right in between 136 degrees, where they're all spinning one way, and 138 degrees, where it looks like they're all spinning the other way, and that is this golden ratio. It's a special angle right in between these numbers that when we get to this, everything looks as if it's spinning one way, and then it kind of folds in on itself and it starts spinning the other way. It's really quite amazing. So let's use the golden angle right here. By using the golden angle, when we run it, we get this, a sunflower pattern. And in this way, it becomes an optical illusion. It's right at the apex of where these two rotations are matching. We can follow our eyes and it looks as if it's spinning one way, but you can just as easily invert it and look at it the other way and it's spinning the other way. The golden ratio is used all over the place. It's used on many, many, many works of art. It's found in the strands of our DNA, again, to the Milky Way galaxy, to the sunflower petals. But this golden ratio, this golden angle, is something we can visualize easily. At this point, we have it. Now take this, add a draw loop to it. Maybe you want to add a lot more pedals. Let's add, say, 600 pedals. Maybe you want to start the radius a little bit farther out. And we keep getting these kind of beautiful, beautiful patterns using sine, using cosine, using the golden angle. Again, at this point, we're leaving with just a setup. Go ahead and tweak this with the draw command, and let's see what you can create. But play around with these angles, play around with these rotations, and really get a sense of it. Hope this at least provided a little bit, made trigonometry a little bit more accessible to you, get an understanding of what sine and cosine was working on. In our next lesson, we'll get back into animation and see how we can use these for handling direction between our elements and where the mouse is. So stick around for that.